Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Casterbrus podcast. Yes, with a K. Available on Casterbrus.com, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Audioboo. It all started as a mild curiosity by these Casterbrites, and now it's turned into quite a spirit of adventure, don't you think? Listen.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Casterbrus podcast with a K. With me this week is Brian Turnover.
That's me.
Hey, Brian, how are you doing?
Jolly. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm not bad either. We've got a couple of guests as well this week, as you may have noticed there. Well, you should know.
Oh, wait, you're right. I do know.
Yeah, you do.
It's just good to be the surprise sometimes, you know?
Yeah, you're right. It should be. It's we're turning into the Muppet Show slightly there, so I thought maybe we should come out with that thing. There. So we are joined this week by Rupert Booth. Hello, Rupert.
Hello.
Hello there. You are a name known to some particular type of Doctor Who fans.
Oh God, probably. I'm not any kind of name at all, really. I'm not totally convinced I exist.
Well, we know that you've got a voice, so we'll
might be a borrowed voice.
It may be, but we'll continue conversing to it just so you can
talk
make
to the borrowed voice.
Of,
yeah, absolutely, it's the safest thing to do, you know, because the voice might go strange.
Absolutely, and there's someone else who's got occasional borrowed voices with us, actually, isn't there?
Ooh, hello.
I must point out that this is a gross misuse and an absurd waste of my capabilities.
Sorry, I don't know what happened there. It's me. It's John Guiler, just doing an impression there of Aurak. I think you'll find that was very accurate.
Very good. Excellent.
It wasn't bad, was it? Well,
how did you do the
sound
effect?
We can fulfill your every desire.
Yeah.
I've heard that, yeah.
Yeah, so I told you I'd get my soundboard out, didn't I? You thought
you
I meant my washboard, and I was going to do a number.
I'm not telling you what I thought you meant.
Yeah. Yes.
I was looking forward to some skiffle, but...
Yeah. You never know. We can do some Aurak skiffle later.
Fascinating new genre. Now, you two know each other, don't you?
Yes, we do.
Yes.
You probably have noticed, listener, that James isn't here, but we're hoping he's going to be along a little later, at which point we may have a round of applause, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. Back to John Rupert. How is it that you know each other, the pair of you?
Well, I'll take this. We met, what was it, 4 years ago?
Ooh, I think really? So, something like
four,
that.
Something like that. Four. We were both acting in a recording session together, and it was just after I'd finished writing a book about Patrick McGoohan, and John was wearing a prisoner badge at the time, because he's a big fan of The Prisoner, and so we immediately got talking about McGoohan, and sort of everyone else who was in the recording vanished, and we just kept gassing on, and actually haven't stopped gassing on since that moment. I think that's fairly accurate, isn't it?
It is. Massive phone bill. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Four-year phone bill.
All those dead carrier pigeons. So, and we've since been working together on several projects, actually. So it's accurate. Good.
Yeah, I mean, we
you're glad I'm here, aren't you?
We met. Yes, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're here. We met. It was an Ian Levine event, wasn't it?
It was indeed.
One of Ian's private recording sessions.
Yep.
One of his private, personal projects.
Is he one that you can talk about?
Well, I suppose it can. We did so many, didn't we? I mean, we've done...
Yes.
What have we done? We've done The Eight Doctors. We've done The Dark Dimension. We've done... What else have we done? It goes on and on and on and on and on and on.
We did The Missing Colin Baker season.
Yeah, we did that. That was interesting. That's where we met.
The only one we didn't do was Sharda, really, wasn't it?
That's right. Yeah, that's although... That's... Hey, I can finally set the record straight. Well, not everybody, but a lot of people think that... That I play Tom Baker in Ian's Sharda, and
I don't know.
That's just not true.
That's not me. That's
do we know the
me.
Name of the gentleman who does?
Yes, it's Paul Jones. Yeah, and we know the gentleman who does. It's
the
Paul
lovely
Jones.
PJ. Hello, PJ.
Hello, PJ. PJ.
He hasn't answered.
He hasn't answered. No. Oh, wait a minute. Oh no, I haven't got him on my soundboard. That's the problem. I do have this person though.
All right, then he's not infallible. It's just that up to now he has never failed.
So he'll have to do in place of PJ.
And there's a PJ connection there, of course. So
well,
that's
yeah,
quite clever. Nice
yeah,
done.
PJ employs Paul Darrow on Jack FM to provide links, which is how we got to Paul Darrow and how we got him in Contradiction.
Yeah. Excellent. Nice segue to Contradiction there, by the way.
It was all right.
It is, absolutely. Now, we've talked about Contradiction before, John, both on the podcast and on the cult cast, the semi-regular cult cast, which I'm hoping to add to tomorrow, incidentally,
right,
someone. And I was really looking forward to it being available kind of this year, but that doesn't look like it's going to be the case now, does it?
We were very much looking forward to it being available this year.
You never know.
It's a possibility.
It is being worked on still.
Just to be honest, really, because a lot of people are asking about it. Yeah, we learned this morning that Tim's working flat out on it. And in all honesty, he's got to a stage where he's got a little bug with it. The game is ready to go.
Yeah.
But it now appears that the iPad perhaps really can't cope with this kind of thing. I mean, it is the first time something's been done purely with video on the iPad, a big game like that. So he's come up against, for instance, he tells us that, you'll be playing along quite nicely, then the whole thing will freeze, or it will suddenly just stop and then start to play the whole film from the beginning to end.
Yeah, jump ahead, which would kind of give a thing away, wouldn't it?
So, yeah, then it stops becoming a game and it starts to become a film, you know. So obviously we can't release it with a major glitch like that. So he's still working very hard. He hasn't given up. He won't give up. Won't give up. So further delay, unfortunately. But that is the problem that you run into when you're trying to do something different. So,
and he's been doing it for the first time from the ground up, really, hasn't he? All the filming, all the writing,
on his own.
On his own, which is remarkable.
Yeah, and there are people in the business who just can't answer his questions because they've never done this kind of thing before on the iPad. So, that's where we're at. It'll be here, but yeah, we keep coming up against, as I say, that's what happens when you're doing something totally different, so just have to accept it. He did say at the end of his email this morning, it's don't rule out the possibility it could be out at Christmas, but I wouldn't hold your breath.
Sorry. So just for the uninitiated, Contradiction is an interactive game, or an interactive movie in the format of a game that is initially intended for the iPad. But I think when I spoke to yourself and Tim that it was going to be on PC
It was always intended for many platforms.
Yeah.
It was always intended for many platforms. It's just that we wanted the iPad. The iPad is the best.
Absolutely understandable,
best springboard, I think. So we were aiming for that first.
You see, I don't think it is because I haven't got an iPad. I've got a PC.
I went and bought an iPad just to play Contradiction.
You did.
Yeah. So that's 260 quid up the swanny. Right.
You can't play it anyway because you know who done it.
Did you have to register as a developer in order to install it? Or?
I think Tim did.
I have no idea.
Well, okay.
I think Tim had to do that, yeah.
Right, okay, yeah, it seems to ask questions of that nature.
I have a vague interest in that. But anyway, we'll carry on. I've got James, so I'm going to add him to the call now.
Excellent.
I could have brought him in at any moment, but obviously we were talking and that would have ruined the flow somewhat. I hope he understands.
I hope he doesn't, because it'd be quite interesting.
Incredibly entertaining,
I hope he's really upset. Let's see what happens.
And once we've done this, we'll move on to that little topic that we were discussing earlier before the podcast. That's if James answers the phone. And possibly in a fit of studenty peak, he's decided... And I say student, I should say mature studenty peak, he's decided he's not taking part in this week's podcast.
How mature is he?
He's about as mature as I am. So just a little under 40.
Ah.
The embryos.
Yes, embryos. Should we entertain ourselves?
It's great radio, isn't it?
I could get the signboard out, you know. I could.
Okay, that hasn't worked.
A little difficult to miss.
I'm very impressed. We could have a soundboard off, but
we could.
Not a great idea. So what I'm going to do is just press this button here.
I'll be back.
And, dear listener, I'm going to utter the words, "The legend begins, Colonel Lethbridge Stewart in New Adventures." Forget the cyber brig. Forget the cyber brig.
Like the cyber brig.
Dear listener, you have the opportunity There's not an opportunity. I mean, you can do it any time from next year. It's not like, you know, it's not like a one-time only sales pitch or anything like that. You, next year, you will be able to read books about Colonel Lethbridge Stewart, the man who would become the Brigadier, in a series of novels set after the Web of Fear by Andy Frankamallen, who writes for Casterbridge occasionally, Lance Parkin, David A. McKinty, and Nick Walters. These are going to be published by Candy Jar Books. And it is fully licensed by the executor of the Haseman Literary Estate. Mervyn Haseman created The Brigadier with Henry Lincoln, who's endorsed it. It's all very exciting. Chaps, I gave you the link to check this out earlier. What are your first impressions?
Blimey.
Yes, and mine is also blimey. Yeah, well, two blimeys.
Nice idea, actually.
Two blimeys, please.
Shut up a minute, will you? It's a nice idea because... Shut it.
No, I have shut up, Rupert.
All right, shut it up then. Look, this is what I have to deal with every single time. Can't off.
Go.
Because, of course, that's an area of the character that you know nothing about, so it's kind of a blank canvas. Obviously, that you know the character of Lethbridge Stewart has been set up, but no one knows what happened to him before Web of Fear.
Mm-hmm. Hey, that's true. Yeah.
You may speak now. My purple light is on.
Oh, is it my turn?
Yeah. I've done my bit.
The data you requested is now available.
Well, yes, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I would be more interested in what happened before we met him, as you say, rather than what happened after. Well, we know what happened after he got stuffed into a cyber suit, didn't he?
Well, yeah.
Let's not talk about that.
It was quite a lot stuff.
It all goes downhill when you talk about that.
Oh, sorry about that. I take it that wasn't a popular move. I'm just guessing here.
It's a very good guess.
Yes. Oh dear, you didn't like that then.
Okay. We won't talk about it as Christian said, but I will say I just found it very disrespectful. Whereas this book, I find interesting because we know what we know that he you know worked with the doctor and then at some point UNIT was formed. I'm kind of curious to see if these books are going to go down the how UNIT became formed tracks because I would like to hear about that, like how the government decided, hey, you know what, these alien things are out there, we should deal with them. You know, that'd be kind of cool.
I think anything dealing with stories before The Web of Fear would be very interesting. But I mean, I don't read a lot of the new books now, so I've all the names you mentioned, all the authors' names I recognize, but I couldn't tell. Did you say Lance Parkin?
I did say Lance Parkin.
He wrote some new adventures, didn't he?
He wrote some marvelous adventures.
Yeah, was he responsible for Long Barrow?
No, that was
Mark Platt.
My memory. I read some of the new adventures way back in the day, and I will have read some of his
stuff. Lance Parkin did the Infinity Doctors, and he also did the Dying Days, which came straight after Long Barrow in chronology. So
it seems so long ago. Well, it was so long ago now. I will have read them.
It
and
was
I've totally forgotten.
It was the 90s.
God,
it's amazing that either of us can remember anything about the 90s.
Yeah.
Frankly.
So. It is actually. Alcohol has been consumed since then, but I think I was probably the wrong person to ask that because I just don't. I'm not a consumer of new kind of Doctor Who fiction at the moment.
I must confess, I'm the same. I can't keep up with it all.
No,
you're not the only ones. To be honest with you, yeah.
There's a lot of it, isn't there?
There is.
It's good that it's out there and people can dip in. You know, I think that's excellent. Exactly. Thinking about it, you know, in terms of where we were in 1989, it's astonishing that there's so much stuff out there, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, whenever I walk into Forbidden Planet down in London in here, I gaze in amazement at things like, there's a Chase playset. There's a Pyramids of Mars. But what? And I sort of stand there going, how did this happen? What happened there? Why didn't this happen in 1976 when I would have really enjoyed it? But I'm not bitter. I am a bit bitter, actually.
Hang on. We had Dennis Fisher. We had Dennis Fisher,
but he looked like Gareth Hunt in his underpants.
He was Gareth Hunt, yeah.
I like the Infinity TARDIS though. That was a clever idea.
I've still got mine.
Have you? No, I haven't got mine.
And I'm searching for one of my doors has come adrift. So if anyone's got a spare TARDIS,
you don't want that. You don't want the special door. I'll have TARDIS. Yeah.
Sorry about that, gents.
Yeah, no. Vanishing off to the 70s as we often do.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's perhaps. And you're not even in the same room.
No.
No.
We don't need to be to travel to the 70s. It just happens.
Mm. Okay. We're fans of James McLean would may be interested to know, because he does have fans, because this isn't the only podcast. He does. Yeah, this isn't the only podcast. I know, it's amazing, isn't it? This isn't the only podcast. Well, it's not amazing. No, hang on. He's a great guy. But this isn't the only podcast he does, because he's also involved with Millennium.
Podcast whore!
The Back to Frank Black podcast. So, yes, he is. Yes, you're right, John.
What a digital slapper.
That's great. So I'm writing that down. That's great. Digital slapper.
Oh, just digi slapper.
Digi
slapper. Waiting for him to reboot, and maybe we can bring him in. Now, there's been some kind of movement in the Omni rumor area.
The Omni rumor.
I love that response.
It's taken up so much of my life over the last year. You guys are saying, "What the hell?" Oh man!
Anyway, Christian, you may speak. You may.
We know that the Underwater Menace is has been given a release schedule.
Yeah.
At last.
But with animations.
Is this Omni rumor or is this legitimate release?
Well, this
schedule?
Is legitimate. This is legit. Well, it's Omni rumor related, but yeah, it's a legitimate schedule. Mm-hmm. And once I actually find the link, because I can't get into the item that it was,
and this is the animated episodes.
Yeah,
this is the animated there's no grand version. News about those missing found.
No.
Dag nabbit.
So this one will have to. I'll have to use Wikipedia for this, unfortunately.
Because that's official.
Well, no, it's because I can't get into the. Where's it gone? So basically, it has been reported that The Underwater Menace with animated episodes is going to be released in 2015 on DVD.
Great.
And so, does it close the Omni rumor, do you think? I mean, especially if we consider that Mr. Morris was on BBC Breakfast, I think it was yesterday.
Yeah.
And his mentions of Doctor Who were scant.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does use some interesting phrases, though, like, because I watched that interview this morning, interesting phrases like, one story we want to get back on the rails is the power of the Daleks, you know, and it's like, back, what do you mean back on the rails? I don't know, he just has an interesting turn of phrase. I'm not trying to read anything into it. It's just an interesting thing to say, isn't it?
It does seem like some of his pronouncements are deliberately designed to be read into. I don't know what's going on with it anymore. I thought I had a handle on it about 6 months ago. I thought, right, okay, there's stuff being worked on. I want to keep it quiet for obvious business confidentiality reasons. Mm. Now, I haven't the foggiest idea what's going on. I don't know.
No. I mean, you know, yeah, we've been kind of close to it because we know Ian Levine, obviously.
Sure.
I mean, obviously, everyone's seen the, the rants between them. Whenever I read anything that's been going on between them, I don't know why, but I just think of Rainbow. I just think of Zippy and George. But how many of you found? that's what it seems like, you know. It's like, will you just wait? I've got a big bag full of film cans. You know, it's like, come on, guys, you know, behave. But, you know.
This is a YouTube sensation waiting to happen, John.
Is it? Oh, God.
I think so.
Going to be a
find that footage, record it. It's brilliant.
No chance.
Brilliant.
Absolutely no chance. I'm not getting embroiled in that one.
Rick James gags to do. You know, it's
exactly. We love Rick James. Rick James from the Mutants. We love Rick James.
He's great. And Blake
Seven. Cesium.
Oh, Stubbsy. We're all done for.
We all love Rick James, and everybody should love Rick James.
Everyone should love Rick James. Yeah.
Everyone to the Mutants now. Everybody to the Mutants.
Absolutely.
Come on, this way. So yeah, Omni rumor. Yes, it's dragging on, isn't it?
It's dragging on, and to return to Rick James, it's got to the point with me where I'm thinking words are no more than words. So what the hell?
Precisely. So what does everybody else think? I mean, because I'm very much like bloody Morrissey on this. I oscillate wildly on where I stand on it, and sometimes I think yes, there's definitely something out there, and then sometimes I think it's a load of crap. I think everyone does.
I didn't know Morrissey had an opinion on the Omni rumor.
Yeah.
Oh. Come on, it's Morrissey's got an opinion on everything.
Well, that's true, fair enough, yep.
Yeah. But I mean, we've had it said to us, haven't we, a few times by people who should be in the know, you know, things like, well, yeah, Marco Polo does exist, and, you know, it definitely exists, and it's being kept from us. I'm trying to use my words carefully and trying not
yes.
to mention names.
Well, I think I wouldn't try too hard because I think we've accidentally mentioned someone's name on here before. But right. we were told that a particular commentary had been recorded by a particular actor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whose work you may know from
Coronation Street?
The Prisoner?
No.
Prisoner? Doctor Who?
Yes.
And,
Oh, him, yeah, yeah.
I was thinking specifically of a Star Wars movie, another Harrison Ford movie, and and Doctor Who. So you should be able to, and a James Bond movie. So if you should be able to
Julian Glover,
yes, that fellow. Yeah, I wasn't gonna mention his name.
Oh, right.
There's
okay.
some editing for you to do now.
On the bright side, you didn't mention his name.
Yeah, good point.
Yes, yeah. No, not him. Someone else.
In the clear. Right, so not Julian Glover then.
Yeah, so that's what we'd heard, and we'd also heard that there's this big warehouse, or a warehouse being used with a bunch of Germans who'd restored some Charlie Chaplin or something.
Right.
And they were being contracted by Philip Morris to tidy up I think Evil or Power, I can't remember which.
Wouldn't it be a real... What if they've accidentally put Charlie Chaplin in place of Patrick Troughton? We end up with this weird version.
Nice.
This silent version of Power of the Daleks.
Well, that's got the audios, that's fine.
Yeah.
There's just so much stuff lying around about it, isn't there? It's very difficult to separate anything factual from what might be complete nonsense.
I
haven't heard the German garage one. No, I have heard a garage, and I have heard that there's a company that's been authoring the DVDs for the last however many years they've been running, which is working on stuff. But yeah. I don't know. It could all be just a bunch of Yeti, as far as I know.
Well, you know, I remember hearing a while back that Wendy Padbury had mentioned something about recording a commentary for The Wheel in Space, which brought about a lot of speculation that, you know, she did it for the found episodes for that thing.
Uh-huh.
But I just met her a couple weeks ago with Fraser Hines and Deborah Watling. And when I asked them about, I was trying to basically not even like get rumors. I was just asking what it was like to see Patrick Troughton again in a way that they hadn't seen him in years, considering that those two stories that were found were not seen. And Wendy like immediately like pointed at Fraser and Deborah, kind of like, yeah, don't ask me, ask them. And, and I didn't know if that was she gets asked too much about this or that was kind of, you know, I'm out of this right now. Please don't
ask me. Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because if it's please don't ask me, then you've got to think, well, why?
Exactly.
Or it's just, I have, you know, this has nothing to do with me, it's all nonsense. And then there's Annika Wills, who's constantly sort of shooting her mouth off, going, yes, all found, which is rather glorious of her.
My story is, and because I'm sorry you've mentioned Julian Glover now, but I don't mind telling the story simply because a friend of mine had the conversation with me on Facebook for everyone to see anyway, that he met Julian Glover 2 weeks ago. And just outright asked the question, have they found the Crusade? And apparently he just looked at him for a while and then smiled and then said, no, of course not, but I'm hopeful. I'm very, very hopeful, very hopeful. And then kept saying, very, very hopeful.
Right.
Very hopeful indeed. Thank you, bye. You know,
that's the problem, isn't it? There's too much circumstantial evidence around. Yeah. It hasn't gone away. I mean, a hoax goes away. A hoax is found out after 6 months at the longest and then is destroyed. This hasn't gone away. And that makes me think, well, there must be something at the core of it somewhere.
Okay. What if the core of it was just a bunch of the Doctor Who actors getting together going, wouldn't it be funny if?
Now, that would be glorious. That would be great.
No, that would be quite good, yeah. I think I'd forgive them, actually.
I'd forgive them. A lot of fans wouldn't, though.
Well, I think they're getting at.
Well, yeah, and it would serve them right.
It would.
But they could never go to conventions again.
No.
You know, Fraser would do something like that, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
he'd love that, wouldn't
he? He's looking healthy at the moment, isn't he?
Yeah.
He was a little sick a few years ago, wasn't he? But he's looking more like his old self again, though.
Well, hasn't he got a very young girlfriend, which is also...
Oh, has he? Well, I wouldn't put it past him. Right.
This is good for health, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
He's got horses, too, apparently.
Yes.
Well,
horses and young girls, good for your health.
I know. It's really serious.
Yeah.
tumbleweeds. Get the soundboard out, John.
Make his edit notes as he goes down. You know, okay. I'm just going to choose a rat.
I don't know who's going to say
anything. You can't separate living creatures. Being alive involves them together.
That was a random one, and that was Blake.
That was Blake.
Yeah. I'm a little bit concerned about the sound quality of your clips. I have to say, they're a bit untidy, aren't they?
Excuse me.
Okay.
They're not sound clips. Whoever made this soundboard.
Okay, I do apologise. I do have an announcement.
Say something. I said shut up.
Unfortunately, James McLean won't be joining us this week. Our listenership is about to halve as they all turn off, realising that there's no James.
But he did leave this message.
I'll be back.
He's quite good at Darrow, isn't he?
He's very good at Darrow.
He's not bad. Before we get into a new conversation, I just want to remind our listeners.
Enjoy this week's podcast? Leave us a review on iTunes.
It's always very, very useful if you can do that.
I loved that little bit of VO. That was interesting.
Good.
It was very intimate, wasn't it? I could hear you swallowing and everything. It's great.
Okay.
You shouldn't have had a go about the quality of his recordings. He's going to be on you for the rest.
See, now I'm going to pick apart your VO now.
He's going to have you now.
Oh, well, I'm obviously going to have to bow down to a superior experience in these episodes.
Just be sure you really pick apart those intros that we got going on right now.
I'm sure that's happening somewhere. Yeah. Anyway.
Christian trying to do his Tom Baker, that's just, come on.
shall I my Tom Baker? Oh right, yeah. Actually, do you know? I don't know if you've ever heard this, dear listener. You may have heard John's voice at the beginning of the podcast, which we didn't ask him to do live, and I also didn't play it back to him in case he, because I don't know whether you like hearing the sound of your own voice, John. So
not particularly.
No, so which is why I didn't.
That's
normally,
why he uses everybody else's voice.
Normally we would have played it, but in the old days, I say the old days in quotes. Oh, I say the old days in quotes. We've been doing this for how long? We've been doing this now, Brian. 2006, 2007, wasn't it?
Yeah. Seven, I think.
I think seven sounds familiar. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we used to have this, didn't we?
Christopherus.com has to be my favorite website in the cosmos. Would you like a jelly bean?
That one's jelly still my favorite.
Yeah, which is obviously that's really the real genuine Tom Baker, which we which I spent something like £2.50 to £5 creating one night after coming home from the social club.
I see. So you get me to do it for free?
No, I did pay Tom Baker £5 for it. It was the old BT voicemail. Remember when you'd ring someone, you'd send someone a text message, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I remember it very well.
Yeah. So that's what it is.
I was out a couple of days ago with a director friend of mine who used to do a lot of promos for ITV, and she'd employed Tom to come and do a voiceover for at one point. Said it was lovely. But also said, do you remember that BT Tom Baker thing? Every single person started sending me texts with them swearing. And I thought, yeah, that's what happened to me as well. I got, are we allowed to swear on this?
Yes.
All right. Well, the first one I got was the entire Uncle Fucker song from South Park done by Tom Baker. But done by Tom Baker in that kind of weird chopped up version that you got him from BT. So it was kind of shut your fucking face, Uncle Fucker. And all like that. I can't do a Tom Baker, but it was just a thing of joy. I think I kept it somewhere. It was that good. I'm finished now. Hello.
Oh dear me!
Yeah, this is shame. We stopped doing this.
Yeah, so fucking BT get £2.50, and I do you a favour. I do it for nothing. They're there. That's the world, isn't it? At work for you, isn't it?
Well, look at it this way. Tom Baker never guested on our show. We gave you that.
Sorry about that.
I'll send you a bottle of wine in the Christmas post.
In the post? Don't send it in the post. It'll be destroyed.
Well, I'll send you a bag of wine. No, hey, speaking of, hang on. Now you're a Yorkshireman, aren't you, John?
Aye.
And although although I wasn't born in Yorkshire as it was boundary wise, I am right. of Yorkshire stock, and it was Yorkshire 2 or 3 years before I was born.
All right, yeah, yeah.
Are you familiar with black beer? This has nothing to do with Doctor Who, by the way, so black you can all beer. Turn
not particularly.
It's a stout.
Right. Is that a brand or?
Yeah, yeah, it's hundreds of years old. Captain Cook would use it on his boats. It's full of vitamin C, so he would take loads of it away with him, mainly for himself and his officers, without jumping into a sort of cod pirate accent to ward off the scurvy. Yeah, thanks. And
I was right there. It was like being on the sea.
I was right there. I thought the bloody smugglers had been rediscovered. I thought he was playing it back.
And I just wondered whether you were familiar with black beer, because old, and I don't want to get into all political things, and because we could possibly talk about that instead of Doctor Who, and we don't want to do that, but our Chancellor of the Exchequer brought in a law, or untied a loophole, basically, a couple of years ago, which stopped black beer from being produced because it had a special, it had a medicinal quality because of the vitamin C.
I was just going to say, why was it good for you?
Yes, it was. So it's very difficult to get hold of. They don't make it anymore and you can't get it. So as a Yorkshireman, I just wondered if you're familiar with it, because I've got a bottle in my cupboard and I've got about 2 inches of it left, basically.
Right. No, but now that you've told me about it, I'm going to start looking into that. Because that sounds fascinating. Even more fascinating is the fact that they put a bloody, a stop to it.
Yeah, well, that wouldn't have happened with whiskey, I don't suppose. Think so. And this is a drink that goes back hundreds of years. And the best thing about it is you don't drink it neat. You get a 750 mil, 75 centilitre bottle, and you dilute it with lemonade. Oh. Or milk. It's delicious.
It says flavour it with some milk. Pregnant women, it seems, enjoy this tipple. That was a strange thing to say. Pregnant women enjoy this tipple. Yeah, well, there you go. I'm going to look into this. Thanks for that.
That's quite all right. My public service task for the day. With me on this week's Customers Podcast with a K is a man who has a history of making fan films. And his name is Brian Terranova.
I see what you've done there.
Yeah. Now we also, but he's not the only one. As you might guess from that little interaction.
Go on.
Because Rupert, you too have made some Doctor Who fan films, haven't you? The technology that Brian Terranova has to rely on.
I don't know exactly what technology Brian Terranova has to rely on, but I imagine we didn't have it.
Yeah.
Time travel.
We didn't have it.
Yeah,
it was the 90s. There was
didn't have it in them days.
No, we didn't have anything in those days. We had stone and cardboard.
We're crime travellers, but no time travel.
Yes, yeah.
So what I was interested in was basically how did that all start off, and what challenges did you face while you were doing it?
It must have been really difficult. Started off because there was a bunch of us in the Northeast who made our own original films anyway, and one day we all were mad enough to get together and say, let's do Doctor Who then, and no one said no. So that's kind of why it happened. Challenges wise, making it any good, really. Trying to find people who can act, failing to find people who can act, I'm including myself in that, absolutely. Building the TARDIS, can't really... build TARDIS, so I had to build the TARDIS and all that stuff. It's very hazy. It was the 90s.
As people still talk about it. I mean, can you hear me? When I first met you, I had no idea that you'd done these fan films at all.
Bless you for that, John.
Yeah, well, there you go. When I looked back at what you'd done, especially the props, have you anybody else seen the props that he built years ago? Anybody?
I had a look on the interwebs.
Did you see anything?
To try and find something about this, but I didn't. I don't know if Brian did.
No, I have. What I was actually, I've been waiting to ask if there is a place we can see these.
No, absolutely not.
Why the heck not? They're and just I think isn't. You're lying.
As far I'm not lying. As far as I know, no, you really? Can't see them anywhere. Yeah. Well, we stopped doing it ages ago, and we didn't distribute really. I mean, the thing is, we never actually. We didn't know about fan films. We didn't know there were any other people in the world doing fan films. This is before the internet really kicked off. So we made them purely for our own amusement and not to really put out there going, look at us. So we didn't really put them out there. There are copies floating around, 20th generation smears on a screen, which is by far the best way to watch it, really. So no, we don't really put them out there because they're amateur things from the past, you know. We had fun doing them.
You just don't want it to blight today.
Not really.
Well, I'd be the same with something that I did 25 years ago. Thankfully, there's nothing left, really. Yeah. There's lots of audio of me from 25 years ago, but nothing too.
But you've got it.
Compromising. Pardon?
But you've got it, though.
No,
you?
I haven't.
You
no.
have. Ooh.
No.
I mean, the tapes are still sat. I'm looking at the tapes now of Time Base. They're sat there. SVHS tape sat on my shelf.
But just because you'll never see it, and so I better describe it. The Cybermen were just. I mean, you made some Moonbase Cybermen, really, didn't you?
We did. Yeah. Very, very talented sculptor called Phil did the masks. And,
but
and
they were just. How many did you have? About eight or something?
We had about. I think we had six Cybermen and a controller.
But they were flawless. They absolutely looked
amazing. Well, they were. They were great. They were really, really, you know, very, very good indeed.
And your TARDIS, it's just, I've never seen one like it, other than the latest one. It was absolutely phenomenally well made.
We did go a bit bonkers. Well, the TARDIS is easy. The TARDIS is a big box. The console room, that was the difficult bit. And the time rotor, we did have people kind of underneath pushing it up and down sometimes when it broke down, when it was working a second before you press record on the camera.
So all Matthew, the BBC, Waterhouse.
Matthew Waterhouse had nothing to do with it, even though he may well have wanted to. so all the BBC stories you hear about actors saying, oh, the bloody time rotor would break down all the time. Yeah, it just didn't work at all. But that was all part of the fun of it. We had someone who later went on to win Robot Wars, usually hiding underneath the time rotor, pushing it up and down and making his own wheezing, groaning noises. Don't quite know what he was doing under there, actually. A little bit suspicious.
Mm. Indeed. So where are you from, Rupert?
Newcastle, believe it or not.
Yes, I thought I could detect something.
There's a slight Geordie cadence, but I never really sounded much like it. I can't even do a convincing Geordie accent, which is a pain.
There's a lot of people who can't, and they're usually on television. But
yes, very true. I apologise on behalf of my people.
Okay, now it is. Thanks for sharing those things with us, and John, with your recollections of them as well. I like to think that we'll be talking about Brian Turnover's movies in such hallowed terms one day.
I think we should.
I'm sure we will.
But his are available to view, are they? Are they not?
Indeed, yeah.
They are.
I haven't seen any, so I'd love
to. No,
tell
me about yours. Let's talk about yours.
Basically, I had a friend who was very active in the costuming kind of cosplay convention circuit.
Which and helps,
he,
yeah.
Yeah, he did a bunch of fan films for comic book movies and so on. Mm-hmm. And one day he came to me and he said he really wanted to make a Torchwood fan film.
Uh-huh.
And that he would like me to make an appearance as the Doctor, because at the time I have been costuming as the 10th Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, ever since I was in high school, and this is going back to the 90s when you were making your films, I had been trying to make films with my friends, but we were all going to do original Doctors.
Yes.
So I said to them, yeah, I'd love to do it. I said, but I'd love to be an original Doctor. And they really wanted to kind of play off the whole cosplay thing that we do and have me be 10. So essentially I presented them with an idea rather than the cameo that they originally wanted. I had this idea ever since I was in high school with being a kid who didn't have a police box of doing a kind of modern day version of the John Pertwee era where the Doctor is stuck on Earth,
nice.
A different type of military organization stranded without its TARDIS.
Yep.
So it worked because we had Torchwood here. The funny thing was I had a police box being built.
Right.
So we've worked in how the TARDIS will make an appearance and how it will work, but it seemed too perfect to have the Doctor stuck with Torchwood without having a TARDIS. So while I have one, it made sense not to use it kind of thing.
Sure.
But,
that's kind of cool, isn't it? You know, I've got a TARDIS, but actually I'm not even going to use it.
Well, honestly,
that's how
that,
we
that
roll.
Was, that was a very big thing for me. Like, I watched a lot of fan films online. I watched a lot of independent films in my time because my base is in independent filmmaking rather than fan filmmaking.
Uh-huh.
And I watched this one film, and I really don't want to go into too much detail about it, but it was essentially, you know, this guy going through a chest after he had just regenerated and trying to find a sonic screwdriver. And when he finds it, it's like a softcore porn film with him with this sonic screwdriver. And all he's doing is showing off all the features, talking about how much he loves it and he missed it. And I just thought, this is not what we're doing. There's you know, story. if we have the props, we're going to use the props the way they use them in the TV show. Yeah, you unlock a door, you put it back in your pocket. That's what
it's
the audience
prop, you get
needs.
On with the story. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. And so that's how we've been working with it. We've been writing our stories as stories that we would like to watch ourselves.
Makes sense.
And when it comes to the props, as I said, it's not a show off. It's just you use them as the props that they're intended to enhance the story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the TARDIS, like I said, will make an appearance. But that episode is yet to come. Well, the other thing I did was we decided to I did a lot of research. And I had realized that a lot of people's attention span on the internet watching videos on YouTube is kind of like 2-5 minutes or so.
Yeah,
long,
yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
So I said, we can't do a 45-minute episode. I said, we can if we break it up into chunks and do web series with it. Mm-hmm. So that's the base that we did. We did a web series. Now, we didn't stick with 2-5 minute time frames. We kind of did the first one as about 2 minutes. The second one is about 7 minutes, I think, and then each episode is as long as it takes to tell. Now that
well,
we've
that's
gotten
once,
people
once
interested,
once you hook them in the first place, they're going to be watching. They're going to stay watching by that point anyway, aren't they?
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
And you know what? We've been taking them to conventions, and we've been doing screenings at conventions, and they've been doing really well. I mean, we've actually had packed rooms, which I didn't
expect. Excellent.
Lots of good feedback. So, you know, people are asked, like, we have one more, well, we have two more episodes to film. One of them's really short, one of them's longer, but, and then we were done telling our story, but people are asking us to do more. And again, I didn't expect that. So it's a great turnout. It's really a nice thing to see, but it's not anything I ever expected for a fan film. Like you, I was doing it out of the love of the character and the
show.
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. We were totally taken aback by the reaction. I mean, we used to get letters. This is how long ago it was. Piles of letters coming through, and I was sort of sitting there going, what the hell? And some of them were really nice, and some of them were those kind of freaky ones that have all different sized letters halfway in the middle of words, and you go, go away. but yeah, the reaction and how people got these things. Were sitting there going, well, how did that happen? Who did we give a copy to that then passed it right? You know, God knows. Yeah.
You know, I'm curious too, because I know you said time base, and I'm curious if I didn't get my hands on a copy of one of yours before, because that sounds so familiar. But either way, I mean, if you ever, you know, if I know maybe you don't want them out there or whatever, but if you feel like sharing with us at Casturbers, I would really love to see them.
Well, you never know. You never know.
Now, interestingly enough, we're talking about this, and we seem to be focusing on, quite a bit on this era between Doctor Who's at the moment, aren't we? Because we've already talked about, we've just passed 25 years of the end of Doctor Who.
Have we? Blimey.
Survival, you mean? Wow.
Yes, Survival was aired on December the 6th, 1989.
Good Lord.
Oh, good God.
Jesus. Sorry. I can remember every single second
Me
of
too.
That. It's just that when you say that's over 25 years ago, I just want to go and take a tablet.
Lie down.
That will allow me to sleep.
And that couple of years afterwards where it was kind of, is it coming back? Is it not? I don't know. That was pain.
It was horrible.
Final realization of going, well, it's just not coming back, is it? It's dead. And then suddenly telling you
it was a realization, wasn't it?
It's actually a bit different for you guys than for me, because I kind of rediscovered Doctor Who when I was in high school. So we're talking maybe 94, 95 here. Mm-hmm. And when I did, I found a particular channel that was, you know, over here, it was on our public broadcasting channels. And I found one that was playing as best they could the first and last episode of each Doctor that, you know, obviously existed and so on.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was like, oh, my God, this show. I love this show. I'd forgotten about this show. And I just sat there and I watched it. And then I saw a Colin Baker episode.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never seen Colin Baker before. Over here, it was Tom Baker and Peter Davison, maybe a little bit of John Pertwee. And when I saw that, I remember, I think it was either his episode or it was Sylvester McCoy's episode when they got to him that I was like, oh my God, they're still making this show.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I got to the end credits, I realized, oh no, damn it, they're not still making this show. But to me, it was all new stuff to be able to enjoy.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Yeah, that must have been nice. So really, there wasn't much of a hiatus for you then, really, was there, in that
No,
sense?
Not necessarily, because really, like a year or so later, the TV movie came out, which gave me a lot of hope, and then obviously it never made it to series.
Yeah.
But it was like a treat for me, you know, all this new Doctor Who, but the TV movie, I always say, was like a reward for finding the show again.
Yeah. Well, myself, I suppose many, many, many other people did the same thing. I had a pen pal in Australia who obviously, I mean, in Australia, it was shown constantly, who used to just, you know, take them for me and send them to me. So that's how I got through those wilderness years, by watching the classic stuff before, you know.
I had UK Gold, yeah. By the way, and BSB. I had BSB
as well, the Squarial.
Wasn't BSB great, yeah.
Yes. Yeah,
I used to get people at college to record episodes for me because we didn't have satellite.
Yeah,
cable.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting you say pen pal. People don't have pen pals anymore, do they?
No. I mean, obviously, I'm talking about. I got my pen pal in 1986. So no internet. So literally pen pal. Yeah. I had to write with a bloody pen. Yeah. I had to actually use a pen, which was obviously distressing. And
I don't want to sound overly romantic about the whole pen pal thing, because I did have pen pals. But if I had a pen pal now, it would probably be Brian.
Right.
Oh, that's nice. Probably the modern equivalent of it, at least.
Yeah, which is nice in a way. I had lots of pen pals, actually. I had a German pen pal, I was involved with a German exchange program at school, but I also had a separate pen pal that was a girl called Edith or something like that. Mm. She was a very pretty young lady.
Oh,
and I also had, and this, I mean, I was only like 14 at the time. And then a few years later, I put an advert in SFX magazine. As you could, I don't know if you can still do classified ads. I don't know. Advertising for pen pal, and I had a few respondents, and one was particularly interesting because she was this fantastic artist. Mm. She was Israeli, and she was about 6 months away when we first started talking. 6 months away from doing her compulsory national service.
Gosh.
Blimey.
Yeah. So we exchanged a couple of letters, and then never heard from her again.
Oh my God!
So that's, you know, yeah. What? I mean, obviously, you think hope for the best, but you never really know those sorts of things.
Have you tried looking her up on Facebook? Silly question, but have you tried?
No, because I can't find the letters, so I can't find it.
I'm really concerned about her now.
I am as well. Yeah, I think the letters are in the loft. I'll have to dig them out.
You'll have to dig them out and see if she exists, because
Yes, you're absolutely right. I need to do that.
I think you need to know before you depart the earth.
I think you're right.
What happened there? Yeah.
But we also, need to know now.
Well, yeah, exactly.
We can't know, unless by some astronomical chance she's a Doctor Who fan who listens to this podcast.
Wouldn't that be amazing? I'm hoping this is going to happen.
Let us know.
Yeah. Oh, informed of it. We want to know the end of this mystery.
We do want to hear the end.
But I will hop into the loft. I'm due in the loft anyway. Not as some sort of punishment.
Due in the loft. I've never in my life heard anyone say, I'm due in the loft soon anyway. I've just never heard
it before, have I?
just because the man diarises his loft time, it's no way to mock it. Some people are just really, really organised.
Well, it's nearly Christmas, and I've got to go up there and get the decorations down, which is why.
Now
I see. Yeah.
Oh dear, that was incredible. Yeah, that was
good. It reminds me of the old Fry and Laurie. The old Fry and Laurie language sketch from the second series, or the end of the first series, I forget, when Stephen Fry says, "So I can say with some confidence that no one has ever said the following words in the same order: hold the pastor's nose squarely, vicar, or friendly milk will count man my trousers," or something very close to that.
Yeah, I seem to remember. Yeah.
So I am due in the loft. So
what time have you got? Enough time to finish this podcast? Or
oh yeah, plenty of time to finish the podcast. Yeah, yeah.
Can we have a report on it?
Well, I can tell you actually, because I was up there a couple of days ago on a previous appointment with some.
Are you having an affair up there?
Your loft sounds great. I want to be invited to your loft.
It was very dusty, and you know, because I live quite near a set of
dust farms.
Dust factories, yeah, essentially, yeah. It's like steelworks and chemical works, and So they do get quite dusty up there, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
I think he's got a woman up there.
No, I think he's got a dusty woman up there.
A dusty woman, yeah.
A dusty, dusty woman.
Ah,
and he's due. I'm just going on what's been said.
Oh, dear.
I'm fascinated by Doctor Who fans.
Aren't we all?
When, you're there. A particular age, because you know, with the internet, we know where there are Doctor Who fans, basically. Mm. Or if you're in big cities, you know where to find the Doctor Who fans.
Mm.
If you
in
go
lofts.
To a convention in lofts, yeah, or in special
dusty, dusty lofts,
or in one particular pub in London.
Yes,
So, with the internet, that changes everything. Now, when I was at college, we were in the internet age, but we were pre-web. So, you know, anything internet-esque was all bulletin boards, which for you two non-techie chats, they're kind of old-fashioned forums.
Mm.
Yeah, and so I only knew two, perhaps three Doctor Who. There wasn't a Doctor Who fan when I was at school. Okay. I watched Doctor Who, and I've said this to Brian before, I mentioned it on the podcast before. I watched Doctor Who because I'd always watched Doctor Who. I had no idea that there was such a thing as Doctor Who fans. I had no idea that people didn't watch Doctor Who. I just assumed everyone watched Doctor Who. So I got to a stage where I stopped telling people, saying, did you see Doctor Who last night? Because, you know, people weren't watching it when we were like 13 and a half anymore. Now, when I came to go to college, and hello to David, because I think he listens to this podcast, and he was someone I went to college with. There was only two other Doctor Who fans at college.
Mm.
Now, how did you find Doctor Who fans? Yes.
It's the smell, mostly.
The smell is more... I'll begin on this one again. same as you. I didn't meet one single solitary Doctor Who fan until I was 10 years old. Right. I mean, I would imagine, like Rupert, well, I don't have to imagine, we have spoken about this. I was plonked in front of the television at a very early age and have never known life without Doctor Who.
Indoctrinated, absolutely.
Yeah.
Doctor Who-trinated, yes, absolutely.
Absolutely.
I think the first time I can remember an adult actually, you know, referring to the fact that, oh, he's a bit of a Doctor Who fan. Except not that anyone spoke like that in my life, but let's pretend they did. He's a bit of a Doctor Who fan. I'm sure somebody did. There's some blokes down the street must have spoken.
Turned out nice again, didn't it?
Turned out nice again. And, by 1976, it was confirmed by the adults around me that I was a Doctor Who fan, so I must have been exhibiting some strange behaviour.
Some symptoms,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And I was 10 years old when I met my first Doctor Who fan. His name's Wayne Shepherd, he's now an actor and musician. You may know of him. He was in Hyperdrive. He was Captain Helix in Hyperdrive. He's also Gary Lestrange as well. He's the Byronic Lord of Pop. It's a comedy thing. You have a look. Anyway, so he was the first person. And I bumped into him, literally bumped into him on the street. I mean, almost literally. He was with another friend of mine who I went to school with, and he said, oh, you two should talk because you both love Doctor Who. And it transpired that he had the Pescatons LP and I had the Genesis of the Daleks LP, and I didn't have the Pescatons and he didn't have Genesis, so we swapped records, and that was that. We still are very good friends. And that was the first Doctor Who fan I ever encountered. But I had to wait 10 years. And, they didn't come thick and fast after that either. I think the next Doctor Who fan I met was probably Elton Townend-Jones, who you will know, Christian,
mm-hmm.
who knew Wayne. And then I don't think I met another Doctor Who fan until we, both myself and Wayne, attended a course at Wakefield College in the late 80s, run by somebody called Clive Eardley. And Clive Eardley, I think, now is the president of the Last of the Summer Wine Appreciation Society.
Oh, right.
And he ran this. He was some kind of lecturer there. But he ran this thing in the evenings, this Doctor Who course. I think he just simply called it the Doctor Who course. but me and Wayne were only interested in going along because somebody had said, if you give them £3, they'll record 7 episodes on a 3-hour VHS tape for you of any episode that you want, anything that exists you can have. So that's why we went along. But we have never seen anything like it in all our lives. in all our lives. That was a Freudian slip. No, it's a Time Lordian slip. In all my life, even. Yeah, some of the most astounding characters there. I could spend literally hours. In fact, I wrote a sitcom about it, a pilot for a sitcom about it, ages ago with Paul Shields. Who's Paul Shields? I'll tell you, Paul Shields. He does the, you should know, he does the photos on the BBC DVDs, the Doctor Who. You know the photo galleries, he compiles them.
Right.
Yeah, we wrote it. I mean, yeah, we co-wrote the script about these people that are on this Doctor Who course. They were just phenomenal. I wouldn't know how to get it across without actually making a comedy movie for you to actually see what kind of people were there. It was all very interesting. Let's put it that way. So there, that's my, yeah. And then, yeah, I had to wait a long, long time to get to know a group of Doctor Who fans in my adult life. So I've had very few dealings with Doctor Who fans in my life, really. That's my long-winded answer.
Okay. It's a nice answer.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. Well, and what about yourself, Rupert?
When I was at school, it kind of seemed like everyone certainly watched Doctor Who. You know, it was always the topic of conversation on Monday morning. Did you watch Doctor Who? Yeah, look, all that thing happened. Yeah, all that sort of thing. So I suppose surrounded by Doctor Who fans in that way, but not fans in the accepted sense of the word. Then in the 80s, I went to a local group. I heard it on the radio. I went to the Who Appreciation North Tyneside, or WANT, where I met some, as John described, there were some extraordinary characters there. Some people who've stayed friends for life, and who've actually gone on to have lives, which is remarkable. Again, also 50 pence an episode, ours were, yeah, the pirates, varying degrees of quality, but anyway, a way to get to see stuff that you ended to have screenings of stories and all that sort of thing. So that was quite fun. Then in the 90s, because we had the props and stuff, we had the TARDIS and the Cybermen and stuff like that, we get invited to go to conventions for nothing, basically. If we brought the props along, so we'd all go along to conventions and basically get marvellously drunk and forget everything that happened, which is probably a good thing.
Yeah.
Then I just sort of lost interest in organised fandom, really, and haven't been back since. Nowadays, I just sit and enjoy Doctor Who on telly.
Yeah.
And don't do any fan-based activities at all. Unless, you know, it's something professional, like doing Ian's stuff, for example. That's my shorter winded answer.
So your episodes were 50 pence each, or 50 pence
yeah,
for the whole
50
cassette?
Pence per episode.
Per episode? Oh,
yeah.
That's steep.
Myself and Wayne
challenged him one day at the end of a class and said, "What's this? Where's this money going?"
Uh-huh.
And it was his friend who was doing all the recording, and
uh-huh.
he said, "Well, bloody electricity, of course."
Good answer.
And me and Wayne said, "Well, £3 for electricity for recording 3 hours of video. I think it must be less than that." Anyway,
yes.
And I fell out with him the same day because there he was. We were talking. It was the fifth Doctor we were dealing with that day,
uh-huh.
and he was writing on the board. He was like, "Let's talk about the fifth Doctor. So, what traits has the fifth Doctor got?" And somebody said, "He's vulnerable." So Clive wrote, "Right, it's vulnerable." And he wrote vulnerable on the blackboard, but he missed the L out. And I said, "Oh, you need to stick an L in there, Clive." And he said, "I beg your pardon." "Because you need to stick an L in there, it's vulnerable." And he went, "No, it's not. The word is vulnerable."
Oh, dear.
So I said, no, you need to stick an L in there. He said, "Why would I do that, John? The word is vulnerable, isn't it?" And he's looking around the class and everyone's nodding. Yes, it's. And obviously, I couldn't let it drop.
It's not.
The word is vulnerable, not vulnerable. And he threw me out of the class. He wouldn't let me have my tape for the evening. It's quite interesting.
Nice.
But he was an interesting character. Another Clive Eardley quote was, he once asked me what I thought of Gerry Anderson's stuff, and I just said, "Oh, I can't be bothered with that shit, puppets." Yeah. And he just went, "What? If you don't like Gerry Anderson, there's something wrong with you."
Wow.
And he was really vicious about it as well. Something wrong with you!
This is the whole fine attitude that persists on the internet nowadays, though, isn't it?
Something wrong with you, actually. Yeah, exactly. It's the whole thing, which is why I stay out of it as well.
Yes, yeah.
So Doctor Who fans have never changed, really. It's just that now they've got the internet, so they can say what they want, when they want, to who they want, and be as rude as they want. And I think that's the only thing that's changed.
And you can buy episodes legitimately at nice quality.
And
so,
you can, and when I asked the BBC, what's that 1999 for the fucking electricity? They say.
It's interesting you talk about these old tapes and stuff like that, because I remember people talking about swapping videos back in the day when there's a few more things that were missing. And these days, that kind of thing doesn't happen so much. Nowadays, people are kind of swapping Ian Levine reconstructions.
Oh, no, I hope.
Illicitly.
Oh, reconstructions. Yeah. Thank God, reconstructions. Yeah, yeah. Private new. Ah, woohoo. Let's, yes. Carry on.
Illicitly. Yeah. Okay. Maybe talk about that another time, John.
Ooh.
Now you've mentioned it. such as the Sharda, which no one is really allowed to see for reasons of one thing or another, and the various other Dark Dimension's another one, isn't it?
I hope that stays where it is.
Was that one of yours?
It was. The thing I'll say about those projects with Ian is that, I mean, they were all very whirlwind things. The reason he did them was because he simply wanted them to exist, and he wanted them for himself. In other words,
why wouldn't you in his position?
Exactly, private project. And he, in his position, he can literally summon some of the original cast as well. So but for me, it was very difficult because he wanted me to play absolutely everybody. So, for example, in The Eight Doctors, I think I played five of the Eight Doctors. Now, this was difficult because I can't do a convincing impression of all of the Doctors. For example, I didn't want to tackle Colin Baker. I didn't want to tackle John Pertwee, but he kind of pushed me and made me. And so, but I did it on the understanding that, well, certainly in Colin Baker's case, there was talk of getting the real Colin in to do it anyway. So I thought, well, this is just a guide track. It then became very surreal, did it not, Rupert, when we were kind of sat opposite people. Like, for example, I played Peter Davison's Doctor opposite Janet Fielding, for example.
That
was really odd, and we were just looking at each other over this table.
Yeah.
Whilst I was going, and she's looking at me in that odd way. I couldn't quite work out whether she was thinking, that sounds fuck all like him, or whether she was thinking, that's uncanny. I couldn't work it out. Yeah. But with Colin Baker, that was a particular problem for me because I didn't think I was doing a very good job, but everyone around me, but you know, was saying, "Oh, it sounds exactly like him." But people do say that; they just do say that. They do. So I couldn't kind of get a handle on whether I was doing a good job or not. But yes, yeah, so you sat there with Nicola Bryan and Julian Glover.
Julian Glover, that was mine. I remember being summoned in. I think John Levine came out and summoned me in, which was surreal enough as it was.
Yeah.
To say, right, you're playing someone called Gold Usher, and I think it was, you know, you're the guy in Invasion of Time who goes, right, you're indoctrinated, you're president now. And I sit down and I get the script and go, all right, yeah, that's fine, just do deep booming voice. And okay, who's the president then? And I look over, and it's bloody Julian Glover sat there going, good morning. Like, okay, fine, that's not remotely surreal then, is it? It's, yeah, nice to have
This is how it was, wasn't it?
That was great, you know.
You would be told, hang on, you're playing so-and-so. You would be told. I mean, there were quite a few of these projects, and it was a bit like being at the best Doctor Who convention in the world.
Just private Doctor Who convention where you sat with all these people, gassing on to Warren Sassane and so on.
Play Doctor Who with the cast members. You're playing, you're out playing, really. That's how it felt.
Yeah.
Or it was for me, because I was plonked in front of every flipping assistant under the sun. And so, right, now be Paul McGann! Oh, God, no! The thing is, the results of these things on audio sound all right, but unfortunately, Ian does insist on putting visuals to them. And if you haven't got the resources, just don't bother. You know, that's my, you know, it's quite embarrassing, but Ian does his own thing and that's that. But if you're listening, Ian, they work beautifully as audios, and even some of the Colin Baker crap that I did sounds fairly convincing, because, you know, this is an interesting segue into this Tim Treloar fellow. Is that his name? Tim Treloar has just been, he's going to be playing the third Doctor, isn't he?
We were talking about this a couple of weeks ago.
I'm just interested in how he's going to get on, because he'll be the first person to be a recasted Doctor, won't he?
Yeah.
Well, All right, I did it in Day of the Doctor, but what I mean is a full cast audio drama. I'm just interested on, you know, to see how that will be received, because I haven't heard his Third Doctor, but I've heard a lot of people say, oh, it's not very good. It's not very good. It's not very good. But I'm just interested in, because I'm wondering if he's just going to give us his version of the Third Doctor, like a bit like Richard Hendel's version of the first, or whether he's going to go hell for leather and try his best to really, really send chills down our spine, because that would be difficult, because to do that, you would need numerous takes of every line to really nail it. I think that would be really difficult to really try and recreate it, you know, that closely. I think that would be difficult work. So I'm just interested to see what he's going to do. Sorry,
I think a lot of people are interested. I think one of it wouldn't surprise me if it's probably Big Finish's most played trailer, at least if it's not one of the biggest sellers.
Oh, is there a trailer already?
Well, when it comes out, there will be a trailer before it's released, or just around the time it's released. I expect it will do very well. It might be one that they decide to put on. I think they've got SoundCloud, haven't they, Big Finish? So
I don't know. I don't follow them at all.
Yeah, they've got a few
All I hear are Big Finish's people tweeting me saying, well, I've written to Big Finish and I've told them that you should be the first Doctor. And which scares me, obviously, because I think, well, hang on, you've missed a massive stage of the process out here. Nobody's ever asked me if it's something I'd want to do, you know. Yeah. I think it'd terrify me. And you know, I mean, as a fan myself, I don't know how I'd feel about somebody, you know, being recast. I just don't know how I'd feel.
How difficult is it when you are using someone else's voice, as it were, to maintain that over, you know,
depends.
For
it depends
speeches.
which voice, you know, you're tackling at the time. For example, if I'm using Tom's voice, for example, I can speak. That just comes to me immediately. It trips off. I can talk all day as Tom. I can be Tom all day for anybody. I know Tom's voice and his mannerisms and part of his psyche inside out. I really do. But if it comes to something like, if somebody said, right, you're playing Pertwee for an hour, that would be very difficult, because it's a very complex voice. And if you're trying to make it sound realistic, you know, like John Pertwee, then you have to do various takes, numerous takes of every flipping line, you know. Mm. Which is why I'm saying, this is why I'm interested in to see where Tim Chalowar goes with it. Because, for example, when I did the Doctor Omega audiobook, I was pleased that they allowed me not to do it as hard.
Well, that's what I was coming towards,
Yeah, and that was easier because I didn't have to think about sounding like Hartnell. I just took a few little characteristics from his voice and just use those, and then I was able to forget about sounding like Hartnell and just tell the story, which was good for me. But if I was doing a Big Finish as the First Doctor, I wouldn't be able to do that. I'd have every flipping, you know, syllable would have to be, does that sound like him? Does that, you know, it would be stopping and starting constantly, you know. I think because there are only two ways to do it, aren't there? There's your take on it, or there's an absolute 100% straight down the line, perfect impersonation. There's only two ways of doing it.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. That was a fantastic answer. Thank you.
How many points did I get?
Well, you there was some pause and repetition and a tiny bit of deviation. So.
Damn.
Now listen, I would love to talk to you both for the rest of the evening, but I suspect that time is moving against us. So. Rupert, what we do often on the podcast is recommend something to our listeners. It can be absolutely anything as tenuously related to Doctor Who as you like. Brian and I will start, because I know Brian has to go.
Right.
He's due in the basement.
What is going on with you two in the loft of your basements? You're weird people.
And,
I feel uncomfortable now. I feel a bit dirty.
And John is worthy, so hopefully he's got something in mind that he might have already mentioned. Whatever, it's up to him. Brian, do you want to do yours first?
Oh, sure.
You don't have to, I can go first.
No, it's quite all right.
Okay, go on then.
Quite all right, I can go. As far as watching things, I've still been watching the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, and I actually just watched two episodes since we were talking about John Pertwee. I watched one with John Pertwee and then one with Sean Pertwee, and I felt like it was a nice family reunion watching those. So I still, once again, would recommend those to everybody, because the more I'm watching them, they're beautifully shot, and I'm actually finding I'm learning a lot about the First World War, because while things in there may not be 100% accurate, as they say, it forces me to look up the information and kind of go over all of this stuff again and have more of an appreciation of the horrors of life, I guess, than I once did when I was a teenager watching this show. So it's been an interesting thing, especially to find out how pointless it all was in many respects. So it's a well worthwhile show. So I would say that. But as far as another Doctor Who connection thing, rather than something you could watch or listen to, I got recently in my hands, I got the Siege Mode TARDIS prop from Rubber Turtle Replicas. And it's a beautiful piece. It's a very affordable piece for any prop collectors out there. So it's a well worthwhile thing. It's got a great weight to it, beautiful look. I mean, obviously it looks exactly like the one on screen because you're getting it from the guy who made it for the one that's on screen. But it's such a nice piece. The detail on it is so crisp and clear. So I want to recommend again Rubber Toe Replicas because it's just you know, I can't put it down really.
Okay, excellent. Wow. My recommendation, well, I was really, really hoping we would have James on today so we could discuss this in more detail. But then again, we can't really discuss it in too much detail because it hasn't been on TV yet, which is really, really frustrating me. And that's Ripper Street Series 3. Because the fact it hasn't been on TV means we can't really talk that much about it because we're going to get accusations that we've spoiled something. Now, Ripper Street Series 3, the connection with Doctor Who is Mayanna Buring, who was in The Satan Pit. She's progressed throughout the three series. She's now a key, absolutely key to the storyline in the third series. It's a very interesting character development. It's gone in extremely dark places, and it's, you know, there's a moment where you think someone has died and they haven't. There's also another moment, which is something that's repeated throughout the three series, where you think that one of the main characters was the Ripper because of the way the dialogue's gone or the set of circumstances, and then it turns out that you're wrong. And you know, it's only it's not that it's a key aspect of the plot, it's just the way the show is made and the way the dialogue and the script progress, it just leaves you with that doubt, so you're never entirely certain what's going on. You just put out of your comfort zone is removed slightly for you. Instead of getting to like these characters, you find yourself a little bit unsure, and then you're liking them again, which is I find is very useful writing, because it tends to liven up some just how you feel about the program. Now, it is only on Amazon Prime at the moment, and regrettably, I've only got one more episode I can watch, because my Amazon Prime subscription ends, and as a matter of principle, I'm not renewing it. Not because of price, but because of business practices. That's quite. I'm gonna have to wait until it's aired on TV for the rest of it, or till I get the DVD. Anyway, but I would heartily recommend, if you are more happy to use Amazon Prime than I am, to watch Ripper Street Series 3, because it is fantastic. It really, is very, very good.
Right.
So that's my. Do you have anything you'd like to share with us, John?
Anything? let me search my memory banks.
I have the information you require.
Right, so I'm going to recommend two things. I'm going to both way back in the past. The first thing I'm going to recommend is something that's always been with me. So that's I'm going to recommend Beatles in mono on vinyl. They might think yawn, but that's fine. You yawn. You have a little kip. Yeah, I mean, I've been listening to the Beatles for years, and I've, I have every album in various formats, but I've started to buy the reissued 2014 monos, and they're just something very special indeed. Get yourself a decent turntable and an amp, of course, you know, otherwise there's no point, but it's the one. It's not really a remaster. It's actually going back to the analog and doing it the right way. So I wouldn't really call it a remaster. It's just that I've never heard them sound as good. So I recommend Beatles in mono. You can buy them individually. Reward yourself with one a month, which is what I'm trying to do. And the other thing that I would recommend is a six-part television series from 1960 called The Strange World of Gurney Slade, which is a surreal series devised by Anthony Newley, who's also a singer. And it's kind of a comedy poor man's prisoner, really, in my opinion. It's a fascinating series. It's very strange, and it's easy to get a hold of. So The Strange World of Gurney Slade. So they're my two recommendations.
Okay.
Mm.
Interesting. Now, I was going to ask Rupert if he... did want to offer a recommendation, but he seems to have been disconnected.
Oh, he says on hold on mine. Oh, hang on. Have I gone as well now?
No, you're still here.
Has Brian gone?
Nope, I'm here.
oh, well.
Do you want to see if you can bring Rupert back in?
Let me see if I can do that.
We're going to finish in a moment anyway, so it's not that yet.
She's obviously going to recommend the time-based Doctor Who fan film. So, you know, we could do that for him.
It's not... No, video call.
Have we lost John? Brian, are you
Sounds
there?
Sounds like it. Yeah, no, I'm here.
I feel sad now.
I'm not good enough for you anymore, Christian. Is that it?
No, the podcast has descended into just...
I'm back.
Oh, you're back. Hey. Thank goodness for that. We were thinking we'd been abandoned, that the podcast was slowly coming to an end in a kind of chaotic manner.
I know, it's not the way we want to end, is it? With everyone just disappearing into oblivion. No, I can't get Rupert back, no.
Okay,
no.
We'll have to
end without him.
A big thank you to Rupert for taking the time to join us in this week's podcast with a K. John Guiler, you are probably... How many times have you been on? Is it four or five podcasts you've been on?
I think this is the fourth or fifth. I don't think even Parkinson's had anyone on this many times. I think he's got...
All right, I'll tell you what. Have him text you his recommendation, and then you do your impersonation of him giving his recommendation.
Oh, that's risky, isn't it?
It is risky. It's a great idea. I don't know what he'd recommend, to be quite honest with you. But no, it seems that we can't get him back. Very strange.
Right, that is unfortunate. But obviously we've had problems with James today as well, so I'm not putting anything past Skype on this occasion. So would you pass on our thanks to Rupert,
will do.
Please, John?
Absolutely.
And,
okay.
We will now do a kind of outro. This is going to be lots of editing for me this week.
It is this week, isn't it? It's been a strange one.
Yes, and I've got lots of deadlines this week as well. And Kerry wants the decorations out the loft. So, I would like to thank Rupert Booth for taking part in this week's Casterbus podcast with a K. Insert agreeing sound from earlier in the podcast here. And John Guiler, thank you for what is probably your fourth or fifth appearance on the podcast. And second only to Gareth Cavanagh, I think. Or tying with Gareth, maybe.
Right. Okay,
yeah,
well,
so
there you go.
It's not a problem. We love it. It's lovely to have you here. And,
bless you
for taking part, John. And Brian and myself will return next week, perhaps with another guest. And hopefully, fingers crossed, with James, the podcast slapper. Until next time, goodbye.
I think James is trying to make no appearances. This way, by the time he can come back, he will be considered a guest.